NFL Network presents America's Game, a countdown of the 20 greatest Super Bowl champions. And now, number 13. Is a long time to hold on to a dream. When Wellington Mara's Giants defeated the Broncos in Super Bowl 21, quarterback Phil Simms was 30 years old. And 30 years was how long it had been since the Giants had last won a championship. Bill Parcells was just a teenager then, living in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey.
I was always a Giant fan as a youngster. My exposure to professional football was the New York Giants. And so my heroes were the players that were playing. I remember hearing them lose this championship game in 58 on the radio.
Allen Amici has scored the touchdown, and the Baltimore Colts are the professional football champions of the world.
All my friends were ice skating out on Lake Apatcon in New Jersey, and I'm sitting in the car listening to the game, and they're all out there having a good time. And I remember how sad I felt after it was over. So that was always in my heart, my team, that I had a special feeling for.
The team Parcells called his own would move into a stadium a five-minute drive from his hometown. The Giants hoped their new surroundings would produce a winner. Instead, they constructed new ways to lose.
Under 30 seconds left in the game. From here on in, Pazarczyk can just fall on the football and there is nothing the Eagles can do. And Pazarczyk fumbles the football. It's picked up by Herman Edwards. I do not believe what has occurred here, ladies and gentlemen.
After the most shocking loss in franchise history, the Giants tried to reverse their fortunes with a change in direction at quarterback.
I'll never forget when Ray Perkins told me about a week before the draft. He says, now, if you're there at number seven, we're going to pick you. And I remember telling all my friends, that'll make the people of New York really happy.
New York Giants first-round selection. Quarterback Phil Simms, Morehead State.
Two years after selecting an unknown quarterback from Kentucky, the Giants drafted highly touted linebacker Lawrence Taylor. Parcells became the team's linebacker coach and defensive coordinator. Together, Parcells and Taylor would transform one of the league's worst defenses into one of the best.
Be more aggressive on that special now. They'll come back with that. You know that slant counter there?
Yeah.
Kick it over.
I want you to
hide.
Bill knows a lot about football, and I'm in love with his football philosophy. That's what that really sets Bill apart from a lot of coaches is that football philosophy. He sees things and he can envision things and he knows how to let his players play. You know, the health, all the stupid stuff. You know, just let your players play.
Taylor had great respect for Parcells, but thought little of the team's fair-haired quarterback.
I very seldom talked to him. I didn't really want to talk to him. As I saw it, he was one of the guys you see on TV that drank tea with the pinky up, you know, stuff like that.
The perception that Sims wasn't tough enough began to bear out on the field. 3 years in a row, he suffered season-ending injuries. Parcells was named head coach in 1983. His first big decision was whether to keep starting the injury-prone Sims or go with Scott Bruner.
I go in and sit down in this room, and there's a desk in between the two of us. And, you know, I'm thinking he's going to ask me a few questions. We're going to talk. Before I can really even sit in the chair, he goes, "Phil, we've decided to go with Scott Deere, the second quarterback. You got any problems with that?" And, wow. So I go, "Yeah, I got a lot of problems with it." And I said things to Bill that day that it's amazing our relationship ever had a chance. I said, "Look, Bill, I can't play for you. You got to trade me." He goes, "Well, I'm going to trade you then." Well, all I can say to that whole thing is thank God it didn't work out.
The front office refused to trade Sims, and Parcells stuck with Bruner as his quarterback.
That was a mistake, but I made it. Almost paid for it dearly.
The team finished with just 3 wins, and rumors circulated that Parcells would be fired.
Jimmy, the New York Giants are in the midst of a pathetic season. What about Coach Bill Parcells? Is he secure for next year?
Parcells inherited quarterback problems. He inherited bad drafting. Now the Giants are looking to get rid of him, Grant.
I'll never forget Bill Parcells saying to me in the weight room that offseason, he goes, "Sims, if I survive this, trust me, we're going to do it my way."
In 1984, Parcells did return. He replaced nearly half the roster and named Sims his starting quarterback. Sims threw for over 4,000 yards, and the Giants made the playoffs. The foundation for success was now in place. The Giants were finally in a position to end their championship drought. In 1985, the Giants reached the divisional playoffs, where they faced the 15-1 Chicago Bears.
An honest evaluation of it, we could have probably beaten them maybe 1 out of 10 times. But that day was one of the days that could have happened.
The Giants landed several big hits, but were ultimately undone by a miss.
Landetta from his end zone. Bears look at good field position.
Oh, he missed it!
This is the football!
He missed it!
It's on the field!
Oh,
it's Sean Gale!
And after the game was over, we're in the locker room, and I think I might have said it to Lawrence Taylor. I go, "Why is everybody around Sean Landetta's locker and getting on him so much? He couldn't help it. The punt was blocked." And I remember all the players looking at me and going, "You don't know?" And I said, "No, I don't know." He whiffed it.
Sean Landetta's whiff symbolized a giant blown opportunity and foreshadowed an offseason of uncertainty. In March of 1986, Lawrence Taylor's drug problems first became public. Embarrassed by the negative publicity, Taylor tried to take matters into his own hands.
3 days after that story came out, I left rehab and tried to rehab on the golf course.
Taylor's golf game did little to improve his ongoing drug problem.
Luckily, Bill was with me that 86 season and helped me.
There was a little bit of a sentiment, particularly in the media in New York, that we just kind of swept this stuff with Lawrence under the rug. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. We were trying pretty hard to stay on top of everything.
In the 1986 season opener, Taylor was still in no shape to regain his title as the most feared defensive player in football.
I remember we played a lot of plays. The defense was on the field a lot of plays.
Ahead by 4 in the final minutes, Taylor was spent. with the Giants needing one last stop to seal the victory, Herschel Walker ran right past him for the winning score.
I just let him walk in there. I was tired. It wasn't pretty.
Coach Parcells looks at Lawrence and goes, "You know, Taylor, I'm going to just have to change your name." And Lawrence, "Yeah, what's that?" He knows it's coming. He goes, "I'm just going to change your name to What's the Matter With?" Because every reporter, that's all they want to know. What's the matter with Lawrence?
Bill, I thought he was arrogant. I mean, he was just cocky and he was crude. I mean, and cruel and all that.
I think Lawrence's personality and my personality really are somewhat alike in the respect that we pretty much say what we're thinking.
Hey, Sully, man, hope I never get back in there. I'm going to kick your ass.
What the are you doing staying 10 yards in the backfield? Get up on the line. Don't you know how much time's on the clock?
And every day he was on my butt. LT, I don't care if I could never do nothing right.
LT went inside. Look at this.
Once in a while, there was a confrontation, and really not that many.
Some of these guys got to get their head out of their ass around here.
I told him, "Man, listen, hey, you're gonna have to either get somebody else in here to play my position, trade me, put me on the bench or something, but you got to get the hell off my back." And after that, we had a good relationship. I mean, a great relationship as a coach and a player.
In 1986, Taylor rebounded from his disappointing start to have the best season by a linebacker in NFL history. He finished the year with 20 and a half sacks and won the league's Most Valuable Player award. 3 weeks after the loss to Dallas, with the Giants now 2-1, Taylor's return to greatness began to take shape. His reemergence solidified the defense, but the offense was crumbling. The Giants trailed 17-0, and tight end Mark Bavaro had broken his jaw.
Of course, they took him away for an X-ray, and he came back, and he had his teeth kind of gritted. Oh, he couldn't talk, and he's like this, and kind of punched me in the back and went, "You know, I'm ready to go."
In what would be a season full of heroic comebacks, Bavaro returned and led the Giants to victory.
How you doing, kid? I'm really proud of you. Tough guy, kid.
And Mark didn't miss any games with that broken jaw. It was wired together, and he was eating his cereal out of a straw for the next couple of weeks, but we went forward from there.
Midway through the 1986 season, the Giants' identity was clear. They possessed a dominant defense and a run-oriented offense powered by Joe Morris. That combination was enough to improve their record to 6-2 and overcome a passing game that was mired in a prolonged slump.
We got to a point, we were awful. We couldn't complete passes. We couldn't get it down the field at all.
The player who received the brunt of the blame for the Giants' passing woes was the team's struggling quarterback.
You try not to read the bad things in the paper, but you can't help when the headline says Giants will never win as long as Sims is quarterback. Oh, there it is. You see it.
I tell you, I wish that Sims had just come out there and get hot, hit about 8 in a damn row.
Yeah. It's going to be tough on him tonight.
We can do something against these guys.
In the rematch with Dallas, Sims hit his lowest point of the season. The Giants won the game thanks to another strong defensive effort. But Sims suffered one of the worst performances of his career, and the home fans turned against him.
And Sims is hearing some sounds he doesn't like.
I knew they were booing me, and that's just the way it is for a quarterback. But it was hard. Everywhere you go, you feel the animosity towards you.
How do you react when fans say that, well, Phil Sims is responsible for a lot of these little bobbles we're having?
Well, I handle the ball more than anybody else, so of course I'm going to be in the center of everything that just about goes wrong, and I'm not going to sit here and try to defend myself or whatever. I prepare and play, and I play pretty well. I'm not saying I'm the greatest quarterback in the NFL, but if the Giant team can win, it can win with me, and I know that.
The Giants were 7-2, and although Sims may not have won many games with his play, his resolve had won over one of his harshest critics.
Phil Sims is really quite a unique guy. He tries to do everything he can to ensure the success of the team. He's very unselfish. I think it's important that the rest of the team know that the quarterback is a fighter, and Phil Sims is a fighter.
Well, there's so many things I can say about Bill Parcells. You know, first off, I wish I would have listened even more. I was just mad all the time. No matter what went on.
All right, we got to get something going here, man.
Damn, I know it. Whoa!
Phil would never cross the line with me as a coach, but he would go right to the edge.
Phil, look, when we call the wide head, that's who we're trying to throw to. Don't be too inventive, okay?
Okay, they took him. They're covering him.
I know, I saw it.
They're just going over
covering the last night.
Yeah, yeah. Just, all right, I see what I'm doing.
I'm not proud of some of our blow-ups. And, you know, in fact, it makes me a little sad. I wish I wouldn't have said some of those things. There was no reason to act the way I did sometimes.
That's a get your fat ass off.
Shut up, Sims. Now, don't be a damn no-class player.
Who's going to hear me?
What is Sims?
But, you know, he kind of taught me to be that way.
Tell that undisciplined center we got to get his head out of his ass.
He makes about 10 today.
All right, 40 seconds here.
Unbelievable.
Here I am coming to the sideline during a game, and I'd be 10 yards from him, and he'd go, shut the up. You can play, I'll coach. You got it? I understood that.
Hey, Phil, I'll run the game.
I don't know who you're sending in.
I'm sending goal line in,
well,
bud.
Somebody give me something.
Okay.
I ain't got time to make the call.
It was unbelievable, the timeouts. It was a minute of getting cursed at. All I can say is I'm so glad I had the experience to play for him. And there's never, I really mean it, there's never a day that goes by where I don't try to put some wisdom on somebody. And I quote him because I remember them all and because they're all so true.
Before the Week 11 game with the Vikings, Parcells offered some advice to his embattled quarterback. His words did not come out of anger, but out of respect, and serve to inspire Sims for the rest of the season.
I said, I don't know what you're thinking, but here's what I'm thinking. You got your team in first place. I said, you just beat your three biggest division rivals 3 weeks in a row. I said, don't pay any attention to what they're saying. Just go out there and play, and don't let that media affect you as far as trying to be a daring quarterback. You just go out there and let it go, and I will support you 100% no matter what happens.
Can you imagine in this day and age a coach saying to their quarterback as he's walking out of the locker room, take some chances. I don't care if you throw four interceptions. Just keep throwing it down. You know, a coach now, they get down and genuflect and, oh, don't have a turnover. And, you know, oh, my God, you know, it's incredible to listen to some of these guys now. But Bill, just saying, the words he gave me, told me during that week, made me feel better, and that was the end of the tailspin of our passing game.
Against the Vikings, Sims completed 25 passes for over 300 yards. But it's his last throw that will live in Giant lore.
The play was half right W motion, 74 X in. So it's pretty vivid in my mind.
As we were getting ready to break the huddle, I said to Bobby Johnson, Bobby, be alert. I might have to come to you late.
4th and 17. Sims dropped back to the 40. Sims throws. Yes, at the 30-yard line. First down.
Those are the kinds of plays that turn seasons around. And to Phil's credit, he stood in there and waited till the last minute and took a pretty good thump.
The pass led to a game-winning field goal. And the quarterback who had already won over the coach had now won over the team.
From that time on, I felt that if we're going to win a championship, if we're going to excel as a team, it's going to be behind the arm of Phil Sims. And he became my man.
Week 12 of the 1986 season marked a Super Bowl preview. The Giants got their first glimpse of quarterback John Elway. On this day, the Broncos' young star would be upstaged by the oldest member of the Giants, defensive end George Martin.
George Martin's play was one of the greatest plays I've ever seen in football. It was at the end of a pretty sustained drive by Denver. He was very tired at the time physically.
I didn't think the old man was going to get all the way down. So I said, hey, flip it over here.
45! At the 45, Elway takes him and breaks the tackle.
He started the lateral to me. I'm like, I'm right here. Come on, give it to me. And then I thought he was dead right here. He was dead. But being the great athlete he is, he goes in and scores.
Martin to the 10.
After beating one future Hall of Fame quarterback, the Giants traveled to San Francisco to face another. Joe Montana staked the 49ers to a 17-0 halftime lead.
And I remember coming in at halftime, and Bill Parcells was already in there, and I could see the look on his face. Sims, we can do this. I'd never seen him in this kind of mood. It was like, we're so close. Let's make this thing finally happen. And wouldn't you know it, the second play of the second half is the throw to Mark Bavaro.
Complete to Bavaro down to the 35. Showing his feet to the 30. Down to the 25. Down to the 20. He's got 4 men in his back and gets down to the 17.
I don't respect anybody in the league more than I ever respected Ronnie Lott. And to see Bavaro dragging Ronnie Lott, it's like, yeah.
Those kinds of things don't happen very often. That was a very inspiring play for our whole team.
Sims threw for a season-high 388 yards, and the Giants came back to win 21-17.
Things like that happen, then you know you're good enough to do it.
The Giants needed only to defeat Washington to clinch their first ever NFC East title.
I loved going down there and playing at RFK. The atmosphere, it was awesome. And we're walking out in 1986 to play down there late in the year. The fans let us have it. They were good. They could say things. You go, wow, that was creative. And Bill Parcells was next to me going out for warm-ups. And he goes, you know what, Sims? They hate us so much here, they like us.
Playing at Washington had added significance for Virginia native Lawrence Taylor.
Washington Redskins just happened to be my father's favorite team. I always like to do something a little special playing the Redskins.
Taylor unleashed his most impressive performance of the season and single-handedly destroyed the Redskins' offense. The Giants won the game and the division. Afterward, their coach offered a rare display of approval and his thoughts on the future.
I think the Redskins got a very good team. And I got a funny feeling that we're going to meet him somewhere down the road again before the 86 season's over. I just thought we played pretty well today. And where's Peter King?
Here.
I'm proud of my guys, Peter.
To clinch home field advantage throughout the playoffs, the Giants needed to beat the lowly Packers in the season finale. The Giants led 24-0 before the Packers stormed back to close within 7 by halftime.
I think in my coaching career, the most upset I've ever been with a team was at that moment. So I went down to the offense, and I told them that if we scored 45 points in this game, we might be able to tie the game. I walked down to the defense, and I grabbed the week's 55-gallon plastic barrel we had with the tape and the orange juice and the Gatorade bottles and everything that was in there for the week. And I pulled it out and I started dumping it on top of these guys. And I said, you guys belong here with the rest of this, I guess I can say, okay? And then I threw the barrel off the back wall of the meeting room and I left.
He is such a baby. He pouts. He pouts all the time. He pouts, 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 pouts. I mean, and that season, he's always pouting. Stop pouting, man. We're gonna win. Let's go. Now I'm quite sure Bill threw garbage. He ain't throwing it in my direction.
The offense did not score 45 points. They scored 55. The defense shut down the Packers. And team captain Harry Carson determined it was now Parcells' turn to get dumped on.
And about 5 or 6 of them said, what are we now, Bill? Tell us what we are now. Are we still horse or are we regular or are we just horse or what are we? And that went on and on. Because by the time I got in and said the team prayer, now the whole team was kind of harping on it a little bit. And where should we go? Should we go right into the garbage or should we change and go to the shower? So it kind of took on a life of its own. But, hey, those are some of the great days that I remember.
Before the Giants' playoff game with the 49ers, Bill Parcells directed his sarcastic jabs at the offensive line.
We had gone to San Francisco in that comeback game. We'd only managed to make 13 yards rushing. So I started calling them Club 13.
Club 13. Oh, it was awesome. You know, I loved it. You know, I loved it when he picked on the offensive line because I knew that was going to be a better week for me.
After being beat up by Parcells, Club 13 set out to punish the 49ers' defensive line.
Let's go, Bill. All right, guys.
I can remember it like it's yesterday, handing it off to Joe Morris early in the game. And as I'd hand it off, I'd turn around and watch, and I'd go, oh, man, we are whipping them big time up front.
Sims benefited from great protection and threw 4 touchdowns. His counterpart, Joe Montana, wasn't nearly as fortunate.
Throws wildly, intercepted. Here goes Taylor down to the 20. 10, touchdown.
LT, way to go.
That was just a good old-fashioned ass-whipping we gave him.
The Giants trounced the 49ers and advanced to the NFC Championship game. The only team blocking their path to the Super Bowl was their division rival, the Washington Redskins.
Bill, you acknowledge that you might see the Redskins down the road. Does the thought of that scare you?
Let me tell you what I'm scared of. I'm scared of spiders, snakes, and the IRS.
Not the Redskins.
Well, you know, they're in our league. It's competition. I look forward to that.
Parcells' biggest worry was not lining up against the Redskins, but rather facing the 40-mile-per-hour winds of the Meadowlands.
We won the toss. And the last thing you want to do is give a team that you think you got a chance to beat at home a little momentum. So I said, okay, we're going to defend a certain end. And that end is going to have the wind behind us for the first quarter.
And with that decision, the tone of the game was set. The Redskins' offense never found its mark. The Giants' offense soared early and cruised the rest of the way.
I remember one of the best performances I've ever seen in professional football that day. Sean Lindetta punting the football. He rebounded from the whiff of 85. He was kicking 45 yarders right through the wind, and a punter for the Washington Redskins. He's kicking it, and it can't even get it in the air, and they're going about 15 yards, and it was a huge part of our victory.
Unbelievably, a punter was the key to the victory of that game.
Weeks earlier, the coach dumped garbage on the players in disgust. Now the fans showered the players with garbage in a celebration. In three seasons, the Giants had gone from winning three games to playing in the biggest game of all.
Going to the Super Bowl, I just thought, man, that's for other people. That's not for people like me. And I think when it was finally over, I thought, wow, so going to the Super Bowl is not just for the superstars like Joe Montana. I'm going to get a chance to go there.
I don't have to motivate this team for this game. Are you kidding? This is the Super Bowl. If you can't get ready to play this game, you ought to take a hike.
We were practicing so well. Bill, one day, he's all excited, and he goes, "That's it. Oh, that's it. Save something for the game. Let's be careful. Let's don't leave it all." And I was like looking at him going, what's wrong with you? Because, you know, he's always screaming at practice, "Do it better. That stinks. You stink."
A week that was already strange then became surreal. Disney, the company that promotes itself as the place where dreams come true, approached Sims to be part of a new advertising campaign should he win the Super Bowl MVP.
You know what they say, dreams are better when you share them.
I said no to it all week. John Elway agreed to it. I said, oh, no, I can't do that. That is messing with football gods, the karma of the game. And, you know, Bill Parcells constantly preached to us, careful what you say. You know, don't seek glory, don't be this, don't be an I guy, all this. And, you know, I really believed in that.
In the first half, Sims remained in the background, while Elway positioned himself to play the commercial's starring role. Late in the second quarter, the Broncos led 10-7 and had first and goal at the one. The former linebacker's coach needed a stop, and the crew he once molded delivered it.
That's when the great players make plays. Taylor made one. Carson was in on one. And then Banks made another one. And then, by some stroke of luck, they missed the field goal. So we went in really outplayed very badly the first half. We're only down 1 point. I told them at the half, I said, you know, we got a good chance to win this now. We can't play that bad.
Okay, now offense, we're getting the ball. We're going to run and pass the ball down the field right now. More importantly, things start going a little rough. You better pull together. Pull together. It's a team, man. It's a team. One guy can't do it. It takes all of us.
On the opening drive of the second half, Parcells jump-started the turnaround by calling a fake punt option on fourth and one. Jeff Rutledge had the choice to run a sneak if the Broncos failed to set up to defend against it.
Jeff looked over there, and he was trying to look at me, and I just kind of nodded my head to him, and that means go ahead with it, and he did it.
After Rutledge got the first down, Parcells' next call was for Sims to pass the Giants to a championship.
I didn't have any sense that it was going to be 22 for 25 with two drop passes. He really was spectacular that day.
Sims led the Giants to scores on five straight second-half possessions in one of the best performances by a quarterback in Super Bowl history. His final touchdown confirmed. On this night, Phil Sims could do no wrong.
I looked up the scoreboard and I said, we've won the Super Bowl. It's over. We have now won.
Sims knew the touchdown had clinched the game. But his coach wasn't quite ready to forget about the play before.
He goes, come here. I think he's going to come over and he's going to say, Phil, you're great. And he goes, now look, Sims, you can't take a sack in that situation. And I go, who gives a I don't want to hear it.
Sims could no longer be described as the quarterback who would never lead his team to a championship. Now his title was Super Bowl MVP.
That moment being an MVP, I didn't realize it was that big. I really didn't. Yeah, it just, I didn't think that way. And if I'd have known all that, if I'd have known it was such a big deal, and I might not have got it done. I don't know.
What am I supposed to say?
I'm going to Walt Disney World.
It's a chase that's exciting. You build up to this big game, and once it's over, it's like, okay, what do we do now? Well, let's go out and party, but everybody's tired. Too tired to go out and party too long.
Bill Parcells knew how he wanted to celebrate the Giants' first championship in 30 years. The coach who grew up a Giants fan and had listened to the 1958 championship on the radio asked his players to give him the ride of a lifetime.
I didn't want this ride to be very long. I wanted it to be kind of a short ride, and that was it. But they carried me and kept going. I couldn't get down.
I'm going to go to Disney World. I'm going to go to Disneyland. I'm going to go to Disney World. I'm going to go to Disneyland, yeah, brother.
As I'm saying I'm going to Disney World, I'm thinking, God, I hope Coach doesn't see me do this.
Again? Huh? I'm going to go to Disneyland. All these people thinking, what the f*** is he doing?
Bill, take a look.
The only performance by Sims that Parcells acknowledged was the one that made the Giants champions.
Well, I'd just like to say that I think that ought to dispel any myth about Phil Sims, because I'll tell you, he was absolutely magnificent. The great Phil Sims. You have to preface it with the great Phil Sims. He was just really an unconquerable guy. No matter what you did to him, no matter what kind of beating that he took, he was getting you the next time. But Phil and Lawrence and, you know, I can't name them all, but the Carsons, Martins, Berts, Bavaros, Carthoff, Bankses, those are the guys that propelled Bill Parcells. There are 20 or 30 of those guys that I wouldn't have had a chance with without them.
The rest of your life. The rest of your life, man. Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
9 seasons after winning the Super Bowl, the Giants retired Phil Simms' jersey.
I knew I had to say a few words out there, and I didn't want to just make a speech. I really didn't want to say anything. Say thank you, and I want to throw one more pass, and that's what all I want to do.
Phil and myself, we had some problems prior to that, you know, personality-wise, and we weren't talking. We weren't speaking. I mean, I hadn't talked to Phil at that time in probably a couple of years.
Thank you. Should I put it on?
But when Dale was going to do his ceremony, I said, well, I'm going to come to that. I need to be there.
Well, right before the game started, in the tunnel, I see Lawrence.
I came up to Phil and I said, congratulations and stuff. And we hugged each other, man. We hugged each other for about 5 minutes, you know. Because, you know, we both knew that what we had meant to each other, I guess, you know, over the course of the battles we had gone through. And he said, man, I want you to come out to on the field with me. I said, yeah, of course, I'll come out with you, right?
I wanted to throw one more pass. In my Giants jersey. So, who better to catch that pass than the greatest Giant player of all, Lawrence Taylor?
I'm like, okay, all right. And I got flip-flops on, and I had a couple beers.
I remember him hugging me and going, man, make sure it's a good pass. Straight down the field. All of a sudden, it kind of hit me. I put Lawrence in a really tough spot. National TV, he's got dress shoes and a sports jacket on, and he's had a few beers. He's going to run down the field, and I'm going to throw him a pass. Go!
I stepped off about 10 yards like this, and he looked at me and said, no, go. I said, go? I mean, actually, no, he wants me to run. And so I saw running down the field, and I thought he was going to throw me like a little end cut. But no, he's still padding. He wants me to keep going. And he throws this big old bomb down the field. I'm saying to myself, if I drop this pass, I got to run my black ass all the way back to upper side of the river because there's no way I'm going to be able to stay in that stadium.
But he came through as he always did.
Don't understand what winning a championship does. Winning a championship will put you together forever. It's like a blood transfer. You get their blood and they've got your blood, and when you think about that time, you can't do it without thinking of those people.
That Super Bowl, what it's done for my life and some of the thoughts I have about football, it does give me an unbelievable feeling of satisfaction that I was part of a team that won a championship. I think about it all the time. I think about my teammates' memories. They last forever. And really, as I get older, they become sweeter and they mean more to me.
I've played on 13 different teams. But that 86 team, those guys mean more, more to us than, they mean more to me personally than all the other teams put together.
If that's not what this is supposed to be about, then what is? What is it supposed to be about? That really was a team, and they're still a team, and they count on one another to this day.
Additional video content, photo galleries, and more from America's Game, visit NFL.com/America's Game.